Way to grow the church. It's slow, but it's steady. It's sure. It's sure. It's a good deal. So tonight, we've got apologies from a few people. There's a few people sick. Darren and Janine Pooker are still sick. Darren's kind of been trying to get back to work and then struck down again with this silly thing. And so they're not here tonight. Apologies from them. Also, Tammy, who was just released from hospital today. I'm not sure if there's any other apologies, but they're the only ones that have come to me. If you need to apologize, maybe you can do it after. Come and see me. And that would be nice to apologize. I want to bring you up to speed with a few things we're doing people care-wise so that you're aware. And I just want to champion some people tonight and say thank you for what you've done and what you're doing. Jeff Pine, I'm not sure how many of you would know Jeff. Jeff's been a long-standing member of this church, and he's in his 70s now. He has Parkinson's, and he's really gone downhill very rapidly in the last 5 or 6 weeks, rapidly downhill. He's now in permanent full-time care. He's in the Trinder Park care facility. He's there with Brian, who also comes to our church. So we're building a bit of a community there, which is good. Brian's happy to have a friend. I'm not sure whether Jeff will be happy with that, but Brian's rapt to have a friend to visit in the home there. And I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to Vic. Vic called in and saw Jeff, totally unsolicited, and just visited with him. Good on you, Vic. I love it when I hear those kinds of stories, just people caring for people and loving on them, and that's a good thing, because Jeff and his wife, Jenny, just need our prayer and support at the moment, particularly Jenny also with the way life has been so redefined. Also want to say thank you to Rex and Denise for everything they've done for Jeff and Jenny, being around there visiting and just taking care of them and looking after them. Where are you, Rex? Oh, there's Denise. Give Denise a big hand. And also Rex. Tell Rex we gave him a big clap. Also for that, that's just so important. Also Frank and Glenys Murphy, who are another lovely couple in our church, they're moving home this coming Friday. Daz and I are going to move them on Friday. If you're free on Friday, we could do with your muscle. If you want to volunteer, that would be awesome. At 8 o'clock in the morning, we're moving them down to Waterford. They don't have anyone to move them. And Frank's retired and can't do it himself, and so they rang us, and we're helping them out in lots of ways as a family at the moment. But I also want to highlight and say thank you to Rex and Denise, once again, who have gone down there and said, we're going to help you clean the house that you're moving out on. So good on you guys for helping do that. Why don't you give them a big hand? Well done. You haven't done it yet, but we're cheering you on, because that's always a lot. There's Rex right there. Rex, what's going on here? You're sitting down here with your mates. I'm thinking you're not here. I thought you were at home watching the block and you'd sent your wife. Oh, recording. Good on you. You guys are legends. Thank you so much for what you do. Give them another hand. I appreciate it very, very much. Then we're another project that we've taken on board to do, and we've been taking our time to plan this, is Janine's house. Janine Hockley. Is Janine here tonight? No, she's not here. Good, I can speak about it then. We're going to do some renos in her house. She's just been in a very desperate situation, and we've been helping her out financially and also with her house to do some minor and also slightly major renovations. So Pastor Darrell's looking after this. We're doing it on Saturday, September 16. And we promoted that in church a little while ago, and we probably had about 6 or 7 guys said, yeah, I can help and whatever. So we're looking for some volunteers. So if you can help out, it's Saturday, September 16. We're putting the day aside. We're taking our own barbecue. We're buying our meat and good meats. And we're going to feed ourselves is what we're going to do. We're going to do a little bit of work and a lot of feeding during the day. And so Darrell would be very keen to talk to you. If you've got some skills, some expertise, it's a bit of garden work, a bit of tree trimming. We've built a fence for her. That's already been done. We're looking to get a professional plasterer in to fix up some plaster issues in the ceiling. So we're going to do a bit of painting in one or two rooms. We're looking at doing a deck and staining that and painting a few things outside and fixing up some doors, fitting a door or two, fitting a security screen, and I don't know what else we might do. We might fit a solar panel. So we're just doing lots and lots is what we're doing. So if you could help, that would be absolutely fabulous. And isn't it good to hear that we're doing that as a church to help people that really just can't help themselves? And we're stepping in, and the boys and girls are putting their hand up and saying we want to be a part of that. So thank you very much. So if you could see Pastor Darrell, I would appreciate that tremendously. This Sunday's Father's Day. So one service is Father's Day. Don't forget, one service, 9 a.m. Make sure you're here for that. Bring your dad and come and celebrate. And Shane Willard's going to be with us. He will be amazing. It'll be a bit different to what we normally do. We're going to do all our stuff and then just let Shane do his stuff. and then we're going to do the man food out there in the cafe, and then we're going to let everyone go home and just enjoy their time with their families. That's 9 a.m. sharp on this coming Sunday. Can I highlight our Vision Offering Day, which is coming up? That's October 22. You're all big people. You know what we do with that. We bring our best offering on that day to really help us gain ground as a church and just move forward. And so encourage you to make a plan. Don't turn up on that day and think, oh, that's right, we're taking an offering. Come prepared, make a plan, and strategize for the best way that you can, as a family or an individual, present the best offering you can to God on that day, saying thank you for all He's blessed you with. And do that, and we would greatly appreciate your support. Now, everybody in this room should have a blue card, a working with children safety card. If I asked you to, you should actually have it on you. You're meant to carry it. So if I asked you to go to your purse right now for all the girls and to your wallet for all the guys, you should be able to produce it. If you do not have a current blue card, we need to help you. So if you don't have a current blue card, we're going to send you an email. You'll receive an email from us and asking for you to take some steps. And so it's just to get everybody up to speed. It's one of the requirements of leadership in our church that you possess a current working with children blue card for the safety of everybody involved in leadership in our church, particularly our young ones. And so if you could cooperate with that, don't ignore the email. Otherwise, we'll take it to the next level and deal with it that way, is what we'll do. So your cooperation would be greatly appreciated. Now we come to the most exciting time of the night, where we present the inaugural volunteer of the, what do we call it? Of the bi-monthly volunteer, thank you, Brad, the bi-monthly volunteer of the year. However, the cup does say volunteer of the month is what this is for. The good news is we filled the cup up. So this is the last person that receives this cup. Then we're going to strip all the names off them and put them on a somewhere and use the same cup. We're going to recycle is what we're going to do. So for the next person that receives it, there'll be little patches everywhere. But don't panic, it will fill up again. But church finances are pretty tight, so that's what you do when it's tight. This is filled with beautiful chocolates, and it's going to an amazing volunteer that volunteers, and is one of the first people to get involved and put their hand up and say, yeah, I can take care of that and look after that or work that out or find that, and just a great strategist and been helping people really from the day that this person entered our church and has helped people significantly that have been in need and homeless and arranging things and food for people, and now currently is the director of our food co-op and looking after that and volunteers copious hours during the week and organizing volunteers and doing trips to the food bank and all sorts of things. The prize this month goes to, drum roll please, Miss Elsie Leanne Christie. Would you please come forward, please? Leanne, all the way to the front. Oh, let me come down. Now, here you go. Cheryl, come out. This is, I tell you, hang on, we've got to get an official photo first. Before, she does do public speaking, but before Leanne does say a word, it's our opportunity to say a word of thanks to Leanne. So there's three people who want to say just briefly a few words of thought towards Leanne for who she is, what she does, and how she strengthens our church. Who's first? Right on, miss. Come on.
I know you don't like public speaking, so I'm going to do it for you. This is a kind, like she thinks that she was going to speak tonight, but I just said you had to be here. So, look, I just want to say thank you to Leanne, because really this woman, you see her just a woman, but she's a real man. Like, she's a handy person. Like, she has this drill, she's doing my office, she's up there carrying cabinets, everything. But this woman, I tell you what, she is a strategist leader, just helping me with everything that I don't like to do. And I just want to say thank you, because 2 years ago she became the director of Food Co-op, like, you know, just doing all those stuff that I used to do. Like, I couldn't drive a truck, obviously, but she does all that sort of stuff, but my legs are too short. But yeah, I'm just saying that, Leanne, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. You're just, she's a fun to work with, great environment. Like, she just sets the atmosphere. So yeah, just want to say thank you.
Good deal. Good deal. Who's next? Andrew, come on down.
I'm so glad I got this opportunity. Wise and graceful. Every time I see you, wise and graceful. And that's just flat out inspiring to me. So thank you so much.
Good on you. Well done, Mr. Andrew. Who's last? Last one. Come running down the front right now. Come on, Matt. No, you can't. Your wife. Who's coming? It's my opportunity. I will say what I think about Leanne. It won't take long. Leanne is now on our staff. By the way, working a day a week in our church office, helping us out administratively. She's there because she was always here, volunteering during the week and organising and planning and running things in that food bank and around helping and putting a hand up to help homeless people and get involved in any of those projects. And we're really grateful for her volunteer attitude and her volunteer spirit and her sense of knowing no boundary. In other words, everything's my job and getting stuff done. And she's a real credit to our church and brings real strength along with her husband to our church. We love you heaps. Enjoy your chocolates. Thank you for being the volunteer of the bi-month. Why don't you give her a big hand? Thank you. I tell you, that's a much coveted cup, that one. And the chocolates aren't half bad either. I had some before. They're all right. They are good. Okay, my pleasure to talk to you tonight. I've got a lot to get through. I'm going to try and get through it as quickly as I possibly can. This is really not a preach. I'm talking to leaders tonight and I'm talking to team members tonight who hold really the culture of our church, and I want to stir and inspire and motivate every one of us as we continue our journey throughout this year. And so I've got a little bit of work on the board here for you that I want you to look at tonight, and you can take a photo of this. It's going to be on Facebook. I want you to get to know this. I'm going to reference it in a few moments. I want to talk tonight about church sabotage. Everyone say sabotage. Church sabotage. On Vision Sunday, and then also on our last leaders event here, I spoke about the need for us to focus on a simple vision and mission for our church and to really develop and engage a plan for discipleship, to kind of like have a discipleship pathway, a discipleship track, a discipleship journey, a discipleship pipeline for people in our church. And so what I want to do tonight is bring some clarity to that thought and also some other thoughts that I've been having, and as a result of that, there's this, which is our next steps culture. Next steps is a wording and a phrase that we've been using. We've got it on shirts, we've got it on posters in the foyer, and we've used that for our Next Steps Wednesday night program. And so we thought, let's grab that language and make it the next steps culture for our church. And the thoughts that I've been developing are all around the concept of four big things that we want to do well as a church. Firstly, that's assimilation. We want to help assimilate people. When they come brand new to our church, we want to provide a pathway for them as to how they get more involved in the life of church and make it their church and have a great church experience. Then we want to look at also the thought of discipleship. How do we take people who are either new or have come from another church and want to grow in their faith more, or the people of our church now, how do we continue to disciple people? Or the next thought was about leadership. How do we have a leadership track, a leadership pathway, a leadership pipeline that's going to continuously develop leaders very intentionally in the life of our church? And then finally, how do we adequately care for the people of our church? How do we do people care? People care, not pastoral care, people care. How do we do people care within our church? And so we built this Next Steps culture, which is based around our four values of belong, believe, become, and build. And so it's all language that you're already familiar with. In terms of belonging, we want to have people growing in their sense of connection. Growing in their sense of connection. You hear this statement, if you're in leadership, and if you're on a team leader or you're a staff member in church life, you hear this statement, I hear it often, I don't feel like I'm really belonging. I don't feel the sense of connection. And normally it's said by somebody who has disassociated, has disconnected, has not consistently come to church, and it's like, duh, do you really want to know why you're not feeling connected? Do you want to know why you're not feeling the love? Do you want to know why you're not feeling a sense of belonging? Because there's like a pathway that people have disassociated themselves from. It's not rocket science why we have these feelings. And as Pastor Marichal preached very potently, it's not about the feeling, it's about the following. And we want to get people on the following and out of the feelings. We want to grow their sense of connection and then into believing, where their faith is growing, and then becoming, where they are growing in a sense of contribution into church life, and then finally building, where they're growing and developing influence in our church. So when a new person comes to our church, first thing we want to work on is a sense of belonging. And for every new person, what we want to do first of all is have dinner. We just want to eat food with them and take them out for dinner in our foyer and have some leaders here and get them to meet some faces and some people. So we do a welcome dinner. That's the first step. Second step is starting point, where we talk about the cultures of our church and who we are and why we do it the way we do it and how they can become a part of church and a little bit of our history and a little bit about our future and teams and all of that. So these two are really key nights in terms of microwaving the experience for people when they come into our church. Then we want to get them connected in a small group, a connect group. Connect groups in our church are not a program. They're not an activity. They are part of the culture of how we do church. We do it big, we do it small. Small groups, connect groups, help keep people together. They help keep people connected. And we're kind of working our way through our leadership and saying to everybody in our leadership, you need to be in a connect group. You really need to be in a connect group of some kind that is involved in discipling and caring and nurturing other people. So that's the process of the initial belonging in the life of the church, which is the launching of our assimilation pathway or pipeline for people. Doesn't stop there, it phases into the next level then, where we work on growing their faith and growing their sense of believing through courses that we do called Next Steps, our Next Steps courses. Our Next Steps courses are broken into three categories: growth courses, leadership courses, and then life courses. So under growth, we start with new Christians. We want them to do a new Christians class, then get baptized in water. And we just see that as a natural progression, that they're growing in their faith, want to embrace Christ more, get baptized in water, get more committed to the life of church. And then we offer leadership courses. Now, network, the network course that we've launched, we just did a pilot class just recently for about 30 people. And this is part of the culture embrace that we're developing as a church. We want everybody in this room should do network. So you understand the language of network, the posture of network, and how the spiritual gifts work with their passion and work with a person's personal style, how God has made them to help them find their fit and to help them be faithful in serving God within the church. Then there's other leadership stuff that we obviously do through that. There's other courses we also do. And then for the life area, we're in the process of closing, finishing the DV course, the domestic violence course. And numbers of people have done that, been really blessed by that. And we'll do all kinds of different courses in that area also. So we're doing training that's on a Wednesday night. It's Wednesday night training. That's the only time we do it, is on Wednesday nights, for growing faith in people and helping them to believe better and bigger. And then also, the result of this is they become a regular attender and they're growing in their discipleship with Jesus Christ and with the church. Then we want them to join a team, because as they're learning, as they're growing, as they're developing, the result of network is that they join a team and get involved, because we're all called and meant to serve alongside of each other. I'm going to talk to you more about that tonight as key leaders in our church, that everyone needs to be on a dream team, the team they dream of, on a dream team, where they go on and their commitment to church grows and grows, where they become a faithful financial contributor to the house of God. Faithful defined as consistent. Consistent. Not a tipper, but a tither who consistently gives to the house of God. So they grow in contribution with their talent and with their treasure. And then finally, growing in influence, that we would be developing leaders and followers who have a real sense of carrying the cultures of our church, a culture of inclusion and honour and celebration and inviting people, and also the sense of preparation, getting things ready for other people, that we would be culture carriers, and then ultimately that we'd all be culture connectors. We'd be leaders. Culture connectors within the life of the church. So we're assimilating, we're discipling, we're caring, and we're developing leadership. And when you get here, you don't exit, but you recycle and keep helping people come through this process so that we're growing volunteers, we're growing leaders, we're assimilating people well, we're discipling people well, we're developing leaders very naturally and organically, and we're also caring for people. So church sabotage. Let me talk about church sabotage. We're going to put this in a brochure for you. We're going to put it on a poster. We're going to put it on Facebook. We'll put it on tweets and Twitter and anything else we can possibly think to get it on. I encourage you to take a photo of it. So come and take a photo of it tonight so you got it on your phone. Church sabotage. A definition of what church sabotage is. Church sabotage is what happens when team leaders in church life do the work of the ministry versus equipping and empowering members to do the work of the ministry. Sabotage happens when people like me do all the work that other people were meant to do alongside of us. That's what church sabotage looks like. And I spoke on Vision Sunday about the need for us to equip and empower. That's what this is all about. Because it's not mystical, it's not a mystery, a sense of belonging. And a sense of growing in your faith. It's not mysterious. There's a pathway. There's a development. There's a pattern. There's a plan. And when you do the pattern and you do the plan and you do the pathway, you get the results. And so this is a go-to thing for us as leaders. So when someone comes along and says, I don't feel like I belong. I don't feel like I'm connected. We go to the plan. Where are you in the plan? Are you doing this? It's what your doctor says when you go to your doctor and you're struggling with your health. Did you do what I told you to do? Have you done this? Well, you need to go away and do that. Are you taking that medication? And a lot of time people want the result, but they don't want the... You hearing me? They don't want it. And so we've got to help people understand the power of process. It's going to become a very big part of our language. You know, the reality is there's consequences when leaders don't fulfill the function and calling of leadership in a biblical way. Now, that's when we just do a job in ministry rather than fulfilling what God actually told us to do. There's consequences when leadership do the work of ministry rather than equipping and empowering others to do the work of the ministry. Every team leader here, everyone that leads a team here, your primary objective is not just to do a job. It's not just to lead a team. It's actually to build teams and build team members. To build teams, strong teams is what we all need to build. So team leaders are not just here to do a job, we're here to fulfill a biblical pattern, a biblical pipeline, a biblical model, a biblical pathway as we've developed it as a church. You know what we do typically as people? We all categorize ourselves. And when you hear me say leader, some of you think, you check out at that point, you think, oh, I'm not a leader. I'm just on a team. I'm not a leader. I'm just on a team. Can I say to you, if you're on a team, you're a leader. Yeah. You might have a team leader, but if you're on a team, you are a leader. And you have people around. Would you turn to your neighbor and say, you're a leader? You are a leader. Now say, I'm a leader. I'm a leader. We're all leaders. You're not just a member on a team. We're all leaders. So don't categorize yourself and label yourself and put yourself in that box and say, oh, I'm just a follower. Every leader is a follower, and every follower is a leader. There's people around you that you have the opportunity when you're on a team, as a team member, to inspire, to encourage, and to motivate. And if we put ourselves in the box of, well, I just serve and I'm just a follower, then we limit God's ability to do His work through us. Can I encourage you to start to believe and behave and think like a leader? Like, you are the leader. I say this to people sometimes. Imagine you're the senior pastor. What would you do? What would you do if you were the senior pastor? And to think that way, if I was the leader, what would I do? Well, I'd probably come to church every week if I was a senior pastor. See, some people have the flexibility and the freedom and the option of coming once a month. If you're going to be the senior pastor, you don't have that. If you have a senior pastor that comes once a month, he won't be the senior pastor for very, very long at all. And so I sometimes say to people who want to be, well, let's pretend you're the senior pastor. What would you do? Well, why don't we start with you coming to church? Let's start there. Why don't we start with you coming to church not only on time but early? Why don't we start with you coming prepared? Why don't we start with you leading from the floor like you're leading on the stage when you're the senior pastor? You know, so we need to start to think and behave and believe like we are the leader, not just a follower. Ephesians 4, it talks about gifts that God's given to the church, ministry gifts like apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors and teachers. And then it says this, their responsibility is to go and visit people and have cups of tea and cake. It says their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. That's my responsibility. It's not to do all the work, but it's to equip the church to do the work of God's ministry. That's what we're all called and invited us into. Don't exclude yourself from what God has included you in. Don't exclude yourself as a leader or a follower from what God has actually asked you to do. Our mission is to build fully devoted followers of God. Our vision is simple. Make disciples. We're here to equip and empower God's people to build the church. That's my job. That's your job. That's our job for every single one of us. And building starts with equipping and it starts with empowering people. So church sabotage, what's it look like? Church sabotage for me looks like this. Church sabotage looks like, firstly, the leader is overworked. The leader is overworked. Now, we all know, if you're in leadership, you know what this is like. You know what it's like to feel overworked as a leader. And I'm not making light of that. It just goes with the territory of being a leader. It's not just that you're working hard. It's just that sometimes you feel like you're doing work you're not even supposed to do. Anyone felt like that? You're doing work you're not even supposed to do. And that also kind of goes with the pathway and the journey of what it is to be a leader, because you say yes to everything when you're a leader. You don't live this boundary life. Some people are so good at living a boundary orientated life that they say no to so much that they never do anything. Leaders say yes to everything. They just get the job done, and that results sometimes in doing stuff that you feel you're not even supposed to do, but you feel like if you don't do it, it's just not going to get done. That's what it's like when you're a leader. So, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that there's always more work to do than you can do. There's always more work than you can do. I say to this to staff when they come on staff, and I remember when Marichelle first came on staff, I said, don't ever think you're going to go home with a clean desk and have it all done. It's going to be here every day. It comes back the next day. And just when you get home and you think you've got it all done and every little box ticks, something will happen out here. And it's like herding cats. You know, like I went home last night. I'd done my day's work and I got home early for a change. It was 6 o'clock. That's a miracle for me. Got home at 6 o'clock. She goes, wow, you're home early. And I was home to watch the news and I put my uniform on. Like I have a uniform I wear to church. And as soon as I get home, I put my tracksuit pants on. I put my t-shirt on, I put my moccasins on, I kicked back, I had dinner, and then I had a cup of tea, I sat down, it's going to be great, let's have a night, sit down, watch the block, take it easy, might do a webinar for my study later, just have an easy night, and I'm home for an hour, got a phone call. I rushed to a hospital, 3 to 4 hours at a hospital, a friend in church whose mother's dying, and it was, you know, looking really bad last night, and go up there, and you know when someone's dying, you can't just walk in the hospital and go, you know, like that, and walk out. As a pastor, that's fairly callous to do that. You go in, you spend time with the family, you're there telling jokes, you're eating their food, you're having coffee with them, and then you go in and pray with their loved one, and sit with them, and hold their hand. And I was there last night, Mike, with Wayne and Vera. It's Wayne's mum, and she's not doing real well, and she's really on her last legs right now. But they appreciated so much that I went that easy night of mine went like bang like that. It's like just when you thought you got it all corralled just nicely. And that's what it's like for leadership. You can be a connect group leader and, you know, same deal for you. And someone calls you with an emergency. People never pick the right time to have an emergency. It's like, for crying out loud, don't you know that's my day off or this or that. People die at the wrong time. It's always inconvenient when you're a leader. It really is. It's always inconvenient when you're a leader. You feel that sense of being overworked. Now, being overworked doesn't mean we should be feeling overwhelmed. Here's how it works in teams. If something is on your leader's plate, it's also on your plate. Like for Darren, who runs our service teams now, if something's on his plate, it's on the plate of every member of every team who's in service teams. If something's on the plate for young adults, for Shannon and Megan, it's on the entire team of the young adults' plate that they carry that. That's what team is all about. Team rally, team support. Like family, they rally to get the job done. Now, in the sense of being team, we need as team members to really take ownership of what needs to be done. Take ownership of what needs to be done so that we're not burden bringers, but we're burden bearers. We help bear the load, not bring extra load. And so when something's on a person's plate, a leader's plate, we help carry that weight. You know, it takes a long time to develop teams with a sense of spirit, the spirit of ownership. At first, you've got to do everything yourself. When we pioneered our church, I was doing everything. And I still do things I don't necessarily want to do, but sometimes I just have to do it, and so I do it. Because you don't cease to become that kind of leader just because you wear a title, or you're employed, or you run a church. You've got to have the attitude that I'm just going to do whatever, but while I'm doing whatever, I'm going to raise up people with that same kind of attitude and that same kind of heart in teams and develop teams. The story of Moses is an interesting story, Genesis 18. Moses is, well, he's just like got a nightmare of a job as a senior pastor. He's got millions and trillions of people that want to see him and they stand in front of him every day. And his father-in-law comes along and says, Moses, what you're doing? It's not smart. You're a stupid man. He said, there's a better way. He said, these people are standing in front of you all day. They're going home dissatisfied, sunburnt. You think you have all the answers. You're not happy. They're not happy. Mrs. Moses is extremely unhappy. And so it's not happy anywhere, Moses. So we need to do something about this. And it's not, he's kind of like saying to Moses, what is it about you, Moses? Are you doing this because you want to be feeling important? Do you need to be needed? Is there no one else that can really help? What's this all about? Because this is just not smart. And he tells Moses, go and find 70 people. God tells him to go and find 70 people and connect these leaders with your heart. And I will place my burden on them and they will lead with you and they will help you and they will support you. Could you imagine the next day when Moses changed the rules and said, hey, I'm no longer going to be sitting out in the front where you all come and stand in line and have personal little appointments with me and we drink coffee and eat lamingtons. It ain't going to happen anymore. From now on, he was going to walk around and find people, go to their homes, knock on their door, and visit Luke and Renee, and knock on the door, Luke and Renee, and say, hey, Luke and Renee, I really like you guys, and I want you to come on board on team. I want to see you really move from a sense of believing to more of becoming, and join a team, Luke and Renee, and start to serve in the house of God. And by the way, while you're serving, I want you to give. Become a faithful giver. So not only are you going to volunteer your time, you're going to give your resources also, Luke and Renee, because that's what good, godly young men and women like you do. And I'm saying that and looking at them because that's exactly what they do. And then become a culture carrier and help lead the children of Israel out of this desert into the promised land and become a culture connector, develop other leaders. And he did this. He went from house to house having coffee, asking people. You know, there's a sense of real power in asking people to get involved and to become a part of what you're doing with your vision and with church. And so Moses transitioned from doing the work to doing the work of delegating and equipping and empowering and engaging to release people and build teams. Now, when we don't do this, the second thing that happens in church life in terms of church sabotage is if we don't do it, if we don't build teams, the leader becomes resentful of demands that are placed on them. That's what happens. They become resentful. You know, occasionally as a senior pastor, I get a good idea. Happened once. I get ideas. It's kind of like, what's that movie? That good Aussie movie with, you know, the guy, the castle. It's like, he's an ideas man. Occasionally I get an idea and I share I share ideas and I share thoughts that I'm inspired by about how I want to do church and how I see church, and can we change this and transition that? Can we stop doing it this way? And can we do it this way and just have a go at this? And I talk to leaders, and I'm really excited because I've got the idea and a real sense of ownership about this. But sometimes when I take it to another leader and I'm trying to explain it to them, I just see their eyes glaze over with that thought of, you want me to do what? You want me to do what? Don't you understand what I already do? Don't you realize how much I sacrifice and how much time I'm giving to what I'm doing? Do I have to give you a list of everything I do for you? It's the kind of language they don't say, but I see it in their eyes sometime. And here's what happens. They can begin to resent the fact that I or someone else above them might ask them to put more on their plate. And very quickly what can happen, and I've seen it happen, is an attitude starts to develop where all of a sudden the good guy, me, I'm the good guy, everyone say good guy, all of a sudden becomes the bad guy because I want to put more on their plate. And it's not that I want to put more on their plate, I want them to develop a team. I want them to build a team that's going to build this dream. That's what I want them to do. I'm not asking them to do it, I'm asking them to build it and build a team who can make this happen. If we don't do that, what happens is we sabotage the church. Leaders that don't equip and don't empower develop attitude because they're doing the work rather than coaching the work. We've got to become great coaches. Become great coaches of our teams. And it doesn't mean you coach so that you just do yourself out of a job. People think they've got to find someone else to replace them so they don't have to now do anything. I don't know where that thought came from. All it means is your job just gets bigger and bigger and you get released into greater responsibilities. You don't do yourself out of a job. You just involve more people in doing the works of the ministry. We call the coach teams. And so we need to start thinking like the leader of the group if we're not a leader. So this is church sabotage. If we don't grow teams to do the work of the ministry, we sabotage and put a lid on the health and on the growth of the church. Our main role is to take the lid off, get some health, get some equipping, and get some empowering. What happens when we don't grow teams is this: our church members feel unneeded. They feel unneeded. They just feel like we don't need them. They feel like we don't even want them. They feel like there's no room for them. They feel like they don't even fit here because you got it all covered. And you know, there are a lot of people that don't really feel needed in church. I've discovered over decades that people find value in being involved. They find value in being involved. The sooner we get people involved, they find a sense of value and a sense of real belonging in the life of the church. So when they don't feel needed, they don't feel valued. What leaders do is we help create a sense of value for people, and we create that by asking them to get on board, get on the pathway, get on the plan, get on the program, get on the pattern, get on the pipeline. You like how they're all P's? Get on that thing. And as you do, we're asking them. People are never going to get involved unless we ask. We're asking them. We need a culture of asking them to get involved because it will create great value for them, their faith, and also their family. If we don't do it, number four, it's the fourth thing that happens. If we don't do it, not only does a church member feel unneeded, if a church member does not hear the call to commitment, and they assume that ministry is supposed to be done by those that are paid to do it. That's what they assume. That the professionals who are paid to do it, and not that they're really professionals, it's just that they're paid, those that are paid to do it, do the work of the ministry. It's because often we don't ask or teach people that they assume that we do it all, which results in a culture of low commitment, a low commitment culture, where you end up with a church full of people with big expectations but little sense of ownership or responsibility to make things happen. We need to call greatness out of people and reverse that sense of low commitment and big expectation. Because big expectation with low commitment or ownership is a horrible culture to have in the life of a church. See, everyone wants great worship. Everyone wants great hospitality. Everyone wants great facilities and great technology and great kids ministry and great youth ministry and great young adult ministry and whatever it is. Yet a lot of people have no sense of responsibility to make it happen. Leaders do. Leaders have a sense of responsibility to make. You don't see Candace stand up here and just, oh, well, whatever happens, happens. Yeah. I'll come to the altar. Father's arms are open wide. Hands in a pocket. Up here, singing and leading. And so why do you think then that that same passionate spirit is passed down and we have Jamaica up here? Exactly the same posture. Hey, doing the same thing. Why? Because there's a leader here leading that and developing that and developing that kind of team. It's the same in every team that we have. We need leaders that are going to really build the sense of team and culture that we want to have as a church. Our staff, let me tell you what our staff are here to do. They're here to do whatever they're told to do. No, they're here to do. Our staff are here. They are employed to equip and empower. They're here to build the church by building teams. They're not here to do all the work because they can't do all the work. They've tried to do all the work. We've tried to do all the work. And we fail miserably when we try and do all the work. We are here to attract and affirm other people in teams. Staff are not employed to do a job. Staff are employed to build the church by empowering, equipping, and building teams. Did you staff write that down? Thank you. That's what we're here to do. See, when we don't attract and when we don't affirm people into the teams that we have in the life of our church, what results is this, is our church members take no real ownership and they find it easier to be absent rather than connected. And there are a lot of people that find it easier to be away from church than at church. I can't afford to be away. And you know, the truth is, no one can afford to be away. We can afford to be away for a holiday, when we're sick, or the odd thing that comes up. But this should be the predominant commitment that we have because it's how and where we grow and express our faith together. Every church has three kinds of people in it. There's consumers, there's contributors, and there's owners. The consumer attitude is this. It's where people look at us and they think, we are the church and we're here for them. We are the church and we're here for them. That's a consumer mindset. It's okay to be a consumer when you're immature, you know, and you're still, they're not bad people. It's just the way they view the church, but it is a very immature way to view the church. It's not a biblical way to view the church, to think, well, they're the church and they're just here for me, just here to help me. The next level is a contributor attitude. This is where they say, you are the church and I support you. So if you ever need anything, tell me. Well, it sounds really nice and really spiritual, but it doesn't work like that. We always need you. Turn to your neighbor and say, we always need you. We always need you. What do you mean if you ever need me? There's always more need than there is people to do the task and the ministry and the job that needs to be done. But the contributors, they will cheer us on and they'll say that. Anything you need, Pastor, just let me know. Well, I need $1 million. Oh, I can't do that. You said anything. Be careful what you say. Anything. It sounds nice, they mean well, but it only works well when people are finding ways themselves to get involved and serve and build the church. When they find their way and they're proactive about it. And we're going to help them find their way by helping them stick to the path, stick to the plan, stick to the pattern, whatever other P I called it. Owners. This is the attitude of an owner. We are the church. We. Everyone say we? We are the church and we are here to build the church for the world. We're here to build the church for the world, to reach the world. You see, the cross was all about the world. It wasn't about Christians. It was all about the world, not about Christians. The church is all about the world, not about Christians. We as Christians are here called the church, but we're here for the world. The church is where we are both followers and leaders, and we have a spirit of we, not a spirit of me, where we all build together. We're all in this together, where people have a sense of real buy-in and commitment. The truth is they're here more often. When they have buy-in and commitment, they think, this is my church. They're here more often. The tragedy is, you know, people can be in a church, but it's not their church. They can be in a church, but it's not their church. And they're always looking to leave the church. God never called us to leave the church. He called us to actually cleave to the thing. Cleave to it. So we as leaders and team members, don't ever discount people in your mind as a leader and think they won't be interested in being involved. They're too busy. They're too busy. Some of the busiest people in our leadership are the busiest people you will know. They're not in leadership because they have nothing to do. You're not here because you have nothing to do. You're not here because you're unemployed and long-term unemployed and you just think, I'll just come down to the church and do a little bit of a favor. Most of you actually have very strong work ethic, businesses, careers, jobs that are very responsible, and yet you come and you lay it down here and you serve here. And I appreciate that. That's how we all should be. Don't ever judge anyone and think, oh, no, they're too busy. They've got this going on, they've got that going on. They got 15 kids. If you got 15 kids, you're good at managing things. Or maybe there are some things you need to manage a little bit better. Don't ever label someone as not interested. Not interested. That was a word for someone here. Don't think ever that someone can't do it. It always amazes me how people rise to the challenge and get things done. You know, most of the roadblocks for us in imagining whether people can do stuff or not, it's in our own head. It's not in their limitation, it's our limitation. The next thing that happens, and this I experience this all the time, is when we don't do it right, the church budget's really exhausted because it's exhausted on staffing because you feel like you've got to pay everyone to get the job done. You pay everyone to get the job done. And there's less than budget for outreach and ministry resources and things you really do need to be doing. So if we have to employ people to do every task we have, then the budget's exhausted very, very quickly and too much money spent on staffing when it should be spent in other areas. You know, the truth is I've been through tough money seasons personally and also in church life and business life. And the truth is when money's tight, everything's tight. Whether it's in your home or whether it's in the church. When money's tight, everything's tight. And to not have money tight, we need to really commit to a pattern and a plan that's going to help people see the value, feel the value, and invest their life and become a contributor into the life of church. The Bible says this in Psalm 110 verse 3, your people, the people of God, shall be volunteers in the day of your power. It's speaking about end times, about how there'll be a great uprising of volunteers in the kingdom and in the house of God. Here's the truth. We're all called to serve, every single one of us. No one gets an exemption from that. Nobody. We're all called to serve God. We know that because we're here. We're doing it. Everyone's called to serve God, to serve in the house of God and to serve towards our community. Jesus said, lay your life down. And he is the ultimate example of what we are called to follow. So without serving, people and church become boring and unproductive and faith becomes sterile. So we need to build teams that bring God's people into works of service. We personally, all of us, need to take responsibility to find, locate, connect people in relationship and functions and help them progress through this pathway, through this pipeline, so that they're assimilated, they're being discipled, they're being cared for, and they're in leadership. This is all about building healthy church. That's what this is about. It's about building healthy church with a spirit of unity, spirit of energy, life, ownership, and responsibility. It reverses the spirit of big expectation and low commitment. It recognizes the value God places on the people in his church, people that are called to do works of ministry. Paul says this in Ephesians 4. I've nearly finished. We've got about 25 minutes to go. He says this. Paul says, God makes the whole body, the church, fit together perfectly as each part does its own special work. Each part, everyone. Everyone does their own special work. It helps the other parts to grow so the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. That's what God wants, the body healthy and growing and full of love. Can I say this to every leader in this room? You need to have an absolute strong biblical foundation and belief and conviction that every believer needs to serve and be involved in the ministry of the local church. You need to believe that with all of your heart. Every single person that is a believer needs to fulfill this mandate of serving God. Every believer without exception. Here's the deal for us. Become comfortable in asking people. The power of ask. Bible says you have not because you ask not. You're not good at asking people to get involved, asking people to help. And you've got to become comfortable with that as a leader. When I first became a leader and I was doing offering talks and things like that, you're always nervous asking people, you know, to give to God. You get kind of used to it after a while. It's like, yeah, it's easy to do now. But initially it was kind of hard to do that. It's hard to ask people to get involved and help and to serve. But when you understand it's a responsibility we have, and this is my responsibility, is to bring people into a sense of empowerment and engagement and equip them to do the works of the ministry. When I'm convinced of that as a leader, the ask becomes easy. If you don't believe in the power of ask, then everything I'm saying stops with you. It stops with you. In other words, people are not going to progress because we won't ask them to progress. So if you're a team leader, people that are on your team, you're going over this with them. Where are you? When people say, oh, I don't feel like I belong. Well, let's look at why you're not belonging. Oh, you've been in church once in the last 8 weeks. Would that be a fair indication? Let's say you went 8 weeks without eating food. Would you be hungry? You'd be hungry. You know why you're hungry? You're not eating. It is not rocket science. Your body starts to break down. You're getting sick. Your faith is exactly the same. And so when people say those things, or I lack this, or I lack, well, why do you lack that? Let's have a look at that. And we can do this, like, with our pastoral care now. No, I'm getting there too early. Hold back, Tony. Hold back. Every leader has to have this strong belief in the power of ask to getting people involved in the mission. If we don't, church sabotage happens. It happens. And we really do people a big favour when we ask them to belong and build. I'm going to close with these five very simple thoughts. Put your seatbelts on. Five very simple thoughts about why we should do this. Why every believer needs to serve on a team. Number one, when they serve on a team, they feel good about themselves. They call it the helper's high. When you know you make a difference, you know, it's exhausting. Like the times you go home as a leader and you're just absolutely flogged, you're wasted, and you go, oh, well, I can do this again. You know, I don't think I can live another day. But it's amazing. You sleep, you come back, you feel good, you help somebody, you know. And whenever you do that, whenever you feel like you make a difference and you're serving in a way that helps somebody in real time, in their real world, it feels great to do that, to be that. So people feel good about themselves. Secondly, they are organically connected and they support each other. Here's our problem with pastoral care in church life. Pastoral care is not biblical. People care is. Because when people think pastoral care, they think, you're the pastor, you need to care. That means you visit me every month. And if you don't, I'm going to leave your church. And people have said to me, you don't visit me. And I say, I will. When you're dying, call me. I will come. I will be there. I will drop everything in a flash. I'm flat out having time to visit my own family, let alone visit someone else's family. But if you're in hospital and you need me, I'm going to be there in a flash. Hopefully I make it before you die. I'll try my best. I live 45 minutes away. That's what I said to Wayne last night when they rang up. I said, Wayne, I'm on my way, but hey, it's going to take me 50 minutes to get there. So hang on. Help. And you know, I got there and I prayed. And she was going to die. Oh, I've been through this so many times. When people call me to hospital and say they're dying, yeah, just relax. I know what happens. I walk into the room, I pray, they get better. It happens. Happens with our mum, didn't it, Mike? She has tried to die 20 times. We get called up, we rush up, we get in the car, we drive up to Bundaberg, we're crying all the way, you know, and we get to the hospital and walk in there and mum's got tubes coming out of her everywhere, they're administering last rites, she's ready to go. We walk in the room, hey Mike, lay hands on her, pray. An hour or so the doctor comes in, I don't know what happened, but she's great. She's lived for another 5 years or so since then. It's like crazy. We do pastoral care. We care a lot. We've got a new system called Avanto, which is an amazing recording system. We're going to be talking to you about it soon. If you're a team leader, you'll be able to do live recording on there. When you do your connect group, you'll be able to connect report straight away on this system. It's database accessible, and there'll be certain limited access given to different leaders, and we record all kinds of information in there privately or whatever. It's an amazing system. We can tell you who's been in church in the last 3 months and how many meetings they've missed. We can tell you who has not been visited in the last 12 months, 6 months, 3 months. We can tell you the date we sent flowers. We can tell you the phone call we made. We can tell you when I looked at you 300 meters away and that's a visit. We can tell you, we can tell you everything, you know, like I visited all of you tonight. We put all that in Alvanto, and it's all gives us amazing reports. That helps us to care for people better. But all of that said and done, do you know the best kind of care is organic care, where people care for people. It's where Victor rips around to see his mate Jeff, because Jeff's in a care home and not waiting for the senior pastor to go because they know he's going to take 2 weeks to get there. But Vic get there straight away. Good on you, Vic, for getting there straight away. That's organic care. So without this organic care going on, what happens with organic care? It's where people serve together, they function together in the church. That's God's design, where we encourage and support each other. That's actually the biblical pattern for care, as each part serves alongside of other parts. And it's this thought that Paul picks up on, as we the body, when one part hurts, the others feel it. Well, I don't know you're hurting unless I'm serving with you and alongside of you. You can be out here disjointed, disconnected, and really hurting, but nobody knows because you're disconnected from the body. But the moment you're connected to my body, I feel your pain and I rejoice with your rejoicing. It's organic care. For this is really people care. Man's pattern, like, you know, with the history of the children of Israel, they were never supposed to have a king. They asked for a king because they saw other nations have kings. God wanted to be their king. But they said, give us a king. We want a king with flesh and blood. So God let them have a king. You know, pastoral care, that's man's idea, the way that it's designed, that we should do it as pastors. And we do it when we need to do it. I do it with elderly people. I do it with people that can't get out and do it for themselves. I take communion around to them. I do that kind of thing. So I'm not saying I don't do it. What I'm saying is I can't do it for everybody. I physically cannot do that for everybody. Neither can my staff of pastors do that for everybody. But organically, we can care for each other as we serve alongside of each other, the body sharing and the body caring, serving together in a dream team, looking after people is the biblical pattern. That's the way God designed it. The next reason people should be on team and be involved and the blessing and that happens as a result of doing what we're talking about is, when people are on team, their children grow up experiencing God's church as family. Don't ever underestimate this. We're kids. We have them in our church. And their mums and dads are at church serving in some way. And the kids are here. And they're running around the place. And the kids are where they shouldn't be. But they're kids. You know, that's what kids do. That's what kids do. And these kids, they love coming to church because they're there with the other kids whose mums and dads are also on team. And they build a sense of community and a sense of family. And for those mums and dads whose kids do that, when the mums and dads stay home or something's not on, those kids hate it because they just want to go to church because they're building family and friendships there. And these kids are organically growing up loving the house of God, and naturally they will serve in the house of God. So something dynamic happens in family when we get people involved in teams. Number four, when we do it right, people are less likely to drift away from the church God has placed them in. People by nature are drifters. Turn to your neighbour and say, drifter. We are, by nature. We're drifters. We drift so easily. We need to be better anchored and have a reason to be anchored. Here's my thought on drifting. People drift in clusters. And they often drift with people. Good people often drift with other people, friends, that are not connected and not building. And they drift with these people that are aimlessly going through their faith life. We need people to feel needed, belonging, a sense of connection. We need people that will plan to be in church consistently. Plan to be in church consistently. Plan to have a holiday, sure. Plan to be sick if you need to be sick. Plan to go away and have your family events. All that's important. All that's important. But plan to be in church as a priority. See, people invite us to all sorts of things. But I don't go if it's on a Sunday. I'm not going. I'm just not going. I say no to a lot of things on a Saturday night because I can't stay out late Saturday night and dance all night. Cheryl wants me to, but I just can't. I can't do that because I know I'm going to be on my game for Sunday. So I don't go out and boogie. I stay home. And yeah, Mel, yeah. We've got a little video clip of Mel dancing that we want to show. No. If you want to see it, I'll show you later. See, you fell into that. So I say no to things because we need to grow people up into this. Because so many people find it easy to be everywhere else but church, and they come once every 6 weeks or once every 8 weeks, and then it's like, well, I don't really feel the sense of, I'm not feeling it. Do you want to sit down and really talk about that? Because I can tell you why you're not feeling it. It's easy when I look at the plan, when I look at the pattern, when I look at the pathway. People that are only here, can I say something to the teams in this room? If you're only here when you're on roster, you're not really on team. You are not on team. If you're only here when you are on roster. On roster and being on team is an overflow of your presence. It's an overflow of what you naturally do. So we need people that have a culture of making church one of their absolute first priorities, knowing that we depend on them. See, that's why you're here tonight, because you know I depend on you. I depend on you. And having people depend on you is actually a healthy thing. A healthy thing. The businesses you work for, they depend on you. That's why you go. And you depend on them to pay you, look after you. So this dependence thing is a real big issue. We need people to feel a part of the team, be part of the squad, to lift the drifter to a whole new level. Here's a big question for people that drift and leave. And it's a good question. How many churches do you need to leave before you're going to learn to cleave? It's a big question. And I want to ask that question to every single believer. How many churches do you need to leave before you're going to cleave? Cleave. Everyone say cleave. Cleave rather than leave. You see, life in leadership and life in ministry and life in church won't always be easy. It won't always be convenient. It won't always be fun. And we need to learn to cleave. If we don't learn to cleave, what you're going to do is leave. And you're going to leave more often. You're going to leave over and over again. And the more you leave, the more you build a pattern of leaving. And I know people that build patterns of leaving every 2 years. They leave. And they go, well, I don't feel this here. I don't feel that here. I don't. Yeah, because it's not here that's the problem. It's here that's the problem. If you keep turning up at the scene of the accident. Number five, lastly, church is stronger and more effective. This is part of the blessing and the benefit of building team. Church is stronger and more effective. When we do church God's way, there's favor and blessing. When people, or we do people and we do our church and we do God a massive injustice as leaders when we're passive or timid about equipping and empowering, or where we just run around and do all the work ourselves so nobody else feels like they fit or belong and can get involved and they don't feel valued. We need to get over that and learn to become great equippers and great empowerers and great engagers. I want to say this is going to be culture, a culture platform for how we do church. This will be the kind of church that we will be. This will be. This is a defining document. This is like the Magna Carta. This is like the Constitution. This is like the vibe. This is Mabo right here. This is it. This here. Take a photo of it and put it on your pool room wall. This will be, you come to me and say, well, yeah, Pastor, I'm really not feeling it. I'll open up my phone, I'll show you a photo of that, and I'll go, feel that. Feel that. That's why you're not feeling it. Let's look at your belonging. Where are you on here? Oh, you cut out at that point. Well, that's why you're not feeling it. You didn't go to the next level. You didn't go to the next stage. You didn't continue the journey. You didn't continue the strategy. You lacked purpose because you didn't get involved in the team and become a faithful financial contributor and a carrier of the culture and then a culture connector yourself. If you just keep going, don't stop, you're going to feel that sense of direction, that sense of purpose, that sense of pleasure from God. That's the kind of church that we are going to be. This is our assimilation plan. This is our discipleship plan. This is our care plan. And this is our leadership plan in terms of how we're going to do it as a church. And I wanted it just to be one plan. I didn't want to have an assimilation plan that was really complicated and a discipleship plan, it was really complicated. And then another one for care, and another one for leadership. I wanted it all to flow together. And it just came to us in picture form. It was like, bam, that's it. That's what it looks like. That's what it sounds like. That's what it smells like. And that's how it's going to stand for us as a church. And this is what every leader in our church is going to use as a reference point, because I see that as being absolute Bible right there. That's what I see. That's what I see. So I want to encourage you to take a photo of that. We're going to keep talking about it. We're going to unpack it. We're going to engage with it. And so when you come to church on Sunday, can you come like you are Shane Willard? Come like you're the leader. Come like you're the pastor. Sing the songs like you're the pastor. Sing them like you're the worship leader. You know, you got your skinny jeans on. You know. Works for me. Just in your head, see yourself that way and be that way. Give like you're the leader. Give with that sense of faith and spirit, and as you prepare for our big vision offering. Why don't you stand to your feet then? Sorry I've gone on so long, but I could have gone on so much longer. But I told you I'd have you here till 9 o'clock. It's 6 minutes to 9.